Your nervous system is driving 95% of your results. Emotions will always override logic. Performance drag is the hidden accumulated stress and pressure that happens to CEOs. The nervous system state of the CEO leaks into the rest of the team. They don't get rid of them. We just move to the next one.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Breakout CEO Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Holman. I help try to bring some perspective to CEOs out there to get behind the scenes insights with other CEOs and people who work with CEOs to make their businesses better. And today we've got Rochelle Carrington with us. Rochelle, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Very happy to be here. Excited to talk to you and your listeners today.
Yeah, it's going to be a good conversation. You're part of four episodes, all dedicated to the concept of scaling beyond the selling CEO. So many CEOs in early stage companies, you know, either call it founder, startup, whatever you want, or growth stage, scaling, again, venture back, these CEOs can find themselves, I don't want to say stuck, but in a sense, stuck, right? Like they're trying to grow, but sometimes they are maybe even the obstacle or the bottleneck as right. to why the company can't grow. So I'm happy to talk with you about that today. And we're going to get into something that you've called the performance drag. I'm really interested to hear the details about that. But before we do that, give us a little flavor about your background and what qualifies you to be working with scaling CEOs.
Well, I guess what qualifies me is that I have been one, still am one. And so I understand a lot of the things that scaling CEOs go through. But the way that I landed here with performance drag was just through my own story of building up a sales training company to a 7-figure business, which was my intention and my goal. And when I got there, you know, everything on paper looked amazing. I had the custom house and the fancy cars and the great business and the high income. And yet I was happy about it, but I started to wake up in the morning with this feeling of dread. And it was really disorienting because, you know, we get taught that when you hit that ultimate goal that you have, that when you get that success, that you're going to be happy and everything's going to become easier. And I was feeling the opposite of that. I was feeling dread. I was feeling like things were just getting harder, even though I knew what it is that I needed to do. And so I did all the things that, you know, scaling CEOs get taught to do when you feel a little bit stuck. And so I did all the mindset hacks. I did journaling and positive affirmations and meditation, and I would feel a little bit better, but then that feeling of dread would come back. And then I thought, well, okay, if that's not working, maybe I'll go do therapy. And I did that and got to relive all my, you know, childhood stories, which is not that fun. And got
probably helpful to a degree, but, you know,
got a little understanding of things, but it didn't get rid of it. And so that sort of got me on an obsession with trying to figure out what was going on. What was the problem? Was it me? Was it something else? And so I stumbled into really doing some research into neuroscience and what really impacts performance. And what I found was a couple of neuroscientists.
Can I pause you there?
Sure.
Oh, this is like we're right on the edge here, and I don't want to delay it, but I don't want to. I know we're going to kind of dive deep here, so I don't want to skip the opportunity. Like what you've just described, if we're talking about problem solution statements or whatever, what you just described is a problem,
yes.
Right? And that's so many people feel that. And I think this show exists. I know it exists. It is intended to exist because I created it to exist in part because of this exact problem. Did you find it hard to be the person that's like, people are hiring you to train them, and then you're saying, wait a second, I've got some, I'm teaching people how to be CEOs or how to get through their own struggles, and yet I'm running into my own roadblocks. Is that a confusing place to be at all? And I ask that because as an attorney, you know, people come to me and they're like, help me solve my problems, not therapy, at least not usually, but you know, help me solve my problems. And then I turn around in my own business, my law firm, and I say, man, I'm helping people solve problems all day, and I think I'm pretty good at it, but I'm running into my own obstacles, or maybe sometimes I am my own obstacle, perhaps. So Is there kind of a contradiction, not contradiction, but is there maybe a tension there between being the trainer versus how to get past your own roadblocks?
Well, it certainly can be. I think that's the whole story about the cobbler whose family has no shoes. But the difference here was that as I was going through, you know, what I was experiencing, I found the solution and in the neuroscience of what was going on and what really impacts performance, I fixed it within myself and developed the methodology before I ever used it with any clients. And so I became a product of the product before I went out and said, hey, now, you know, there must be thousands of other CEOs and founders who are experiencing the exact same thing I am. I can't be the only one, or at least that's what I was hoping. So I became a product of the methodology and built the thing to help me that then became the thing that is helping, you know, a lot of other CEOs and founders out there.
Yeah. And that makes sense because, you know, you are the trainer. So when you learn the new skill or you figure out how to overcome something, you're probably like, next step is just naturally, well, let me show you how to do it too.
Right. Right. I believe that it's very important to be a product of the product. And it doesn't mean I'm perfect. Believe me, nobody is. We all still have things that, you know, roadblocks that come up. But to be able to say, hey, this is what I went through and I figured out a solution and now I can help you through it as well, you know, says a lot that we basically eat our own dog food here.
Yep, for sure. Yeah. And sometimes you don't have to be, you know, light years ahead of the people you're training. You got to be a few steps ahead at least so you can, you've Correct. Seen around the next corner at a minimum or as we might say in Utah, you've seen over the next ridge, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit about what performance drag means then. I can guess, but I want to hear your explanation.
Yeah. Performance drag is basically the hidden accumulated stress and pressure that happens to CEOs. And it really starts to affect their execution. They get more mental noise. It affects their decision speed. It affects the clarity and their focus. And eventually that will result in stagnant or stalled revenue. And so it's just that hidden accumulated stress that most people don't know is there. And they believe it's just how it feels when you build a business. This is just what's going to happen. And the answer is that's actually not true. It doesn't have to happen that way.
Is this an external thing or an internal thing or some combination of the two?
It's an internal thing. So if we go back to just the quick neuroscience behind it, in the 90s, two neuroscientists, Antonio Damasio and Joseph Ledoux, discovered that emotion fires before thought and then a result happens. Now, before that, we were always told that thought drives emotion, which drives results. And so that's why everybody would really focus on things like mindset hacks, because those are all logical mind tools, right? So if I change the way I think, then I'll change my results. But the problem is people have found that like it doesn't work and it doesn't hold and it's not really like, so they start to think there must be something wrong with me because those things aren't working for me. Well, there's nothing wrong with you. It's that you're using the wrong tool for the job. And so when we understand that emotion drives thought, your emotion actually happens 250 milliseconds before a thought comes in to make sense of that emotion. And then you take an action and get a result. If you understand that, then it makes all the sense in the world to go, okay, well, where are our emotions? They're held in our nervous system. Your nervous system is driving 95% of your results. And so it's that internal load that happens over time. And the interesting thing, Jeff, with CEOs and founders is that they have an ability as you continue to grow your business and you have all sorts of different roadblocks that come up as you're doing that. What we get told as high performers, as CEOs, is when a roadblock comes up, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to push through it. And so even though
persist, grind, whatever it might be. Yeah,
exactly. Get more discipline, have more grit, have more resilience. There's no pain, you know, with it. You can't get gain without pain. And so we've all been taught this for years and years. But the problem is that that emotion. So for high performing people, they never resolve an emotion. So something happens, especially if you're a founder and you're doing a lot of your own selling, you don't get a deal that you thought you were going to get. You instantly feel like, oh no, but you don't have time to resolve that emotion fully because you got to go to the next thing. There's another deal that's waiting. There's somebody you need to hire. There's somebody knocking at your door that wants help with something. And so we never resolve things. We just move to the next one. And so you can kind of think of it like having, you know, your nervous system has all of these filing cabinet drawers in it, and each drawer is an emotion: anger, frustration, annoyance, guilt, etc. Well, when you don't resolve that emotion, that drawer stays open. And high performing founders and CEOs are constantly jumping to the next thing, ignore it, move on, ignore it, move on. And that is what builds up. And that is what becomes performance drag.
Interesting. So going back to the first part of what you said there, you know, mindset, and I think a lot of people feel this way, right? Mindset or your thoughts dictate your behavior. But what you're really saying is in a sense, emotion precedes the mindset. So if we skip the emotional part of it, then the behavior and the mindset are really not under as much control as we want them to be, because we're totally overlooking the emotional connection that drives those two things. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. And it's the neuroscience that has figured that out. Now, before the 1990s, you know, we did believe that thought preceded everything, and so mindset made sense. Now, knowing what we know, we need to start changing the way we think about performance, because, you know, emotions will always override logic. And we know that because we've all had situations where we've done or said something that logically we knew we shouldn't, and yet we did it anyway because we were super happy or super mad or super nervous or whatever it happens to be. And so it's not to say that mindset tools aren't good, but they don't help. They manage a situation. They manage the symptoms of performance drag. They don't get rid of them. And what we're really focused on is removing performance drag, not managing stress and pressure and anxiety and all of those emotions. If you remove them, it's like taking a virus out of a computer. Before the virus, the computer works incredibly well. The virus comes along, it gets glitchy, it gets slow. Well, you don't just try to manage your computer differently. You pull the virus out and then the computer goes back online. So when you pull out the performance drag, then you're using the mindset tools. Now you're taking off because now your emotional state and your, you know, logical mind are working together rather than, you know, beating each other up.
That's funny. I mean, not funny. That's really interesting. But I was thinking ahead a little bit too much, and I apologize for that, because there is, I think, maybe a really stark irony here in that we're talking about helping CEOs get beyond being the seller, right, in their own business, like being maybe that sales or revenue bottleneck in their business. Right. And as I think about that function, you have a lot of CEOs know it, you know, they know academically exactly what you're saying because they use the sales tactics of sell with emotion, you know, and justify with logic. How many in my MBA program, we talked about that a lot. Absolutely. A lot of you probably trained that in your sales training earlier. People make sales or purchase decisions based on emotion first and justify with logic. We can all think back to how many things we've tried to tell our spouse or partner or family, this was a great purchase decision, even though has nothing to do with why we actually bought it.
Right.
And so the fact that CEOs, selling CEOs in particular, and other salespeople understand and use this often as part of their sales, you know, process, but yet at the same time can get stuck with the drag by not applying it to their own, to themselves in a way. Is there a tension there? Like, do you think that, does that exist the way that I've described it, or am I off, do you think?
No, I think you described that really well. And that's an insight that most people, you know, haven't pulled together. But I think a lot of times the reason why CEOs and founders stay in the sales position is because they've got performance drag, but they're not aware of it. And therefore, they just think it's something else. They've got the fear of handing the sale to somebody else because they may not be as good at it. Or now I'm going to have to take time. Maybe I have to put money into training you. It's easier for me to do. There's a lot of that drag. I can do it faster. So there's a lot of that drag that will impact that decision to hand it to someone else or teach it to someone else or hire someone else to do that. And, you know, I think the other thing is that we have been taught for so long that everything is mindset. And now it just is coming to the forefront, even though, again, we've known this for 35 years. People are just starting to talk about how the nervous system is running everything and your emotions are more in charge than your logical mind. Your logic drives you about 5%. Your emotions drive about 95% of your results. So this is becoming part of the conversation. And so that I think that people will start to recognize that a lot more, but it just hasn't really been talked about that much. And the idea of selling emotionally, buying intellectually has been talked about a lot more than how do we apply it to ourselves.
So how do we get there? Let's say I'm a CEO and I do this emotional, intellectual sales process. And then I turn around and I just, you know, I get stuck in my logic of I can do it faster. What would you say are kind of the steps that a CEO should start to think about to unwind themselves from their own, you know, from their own mess?
Well, I think you've got to really go back to what are the emotions driving that particular decision. When you're seeing symptoms of performance drag, things like revenue is starting to stagnate, your mind is constantly going because there's so many things to do and that mental noise becomes so high that you just feel like you can't really make a decision. You've been thinking about hiring somebody, but you haven't really pulled the trigger on it for a variety of reasons. Those are all signs that performance drag is prevalent. And so, you know, the decision then has to be, do I get rid of it or do I keep it? Do I just continue to hobble along like this, knowing that I can only grow so much when I am the bottleneck? And CEOs and founders that are the number one salesperson, at some point, you're going to hit a level where you just can't do it anymore, where you cannot grow the business to the, you know, to the level that you want to as that number one salesperson. And so, you know, you got to make the decision that, yes, it's going to be messy and dirty and hard to get someone else to do it. However, if you remove the drag, it's going to make it a lot easier because the things that happen when the performance drag is gone is all of a sudden you see very clearly, of course, I need to hire someone. Here's where I'm going to go do it. These are the steps that I'm going to take to train this person so that they can sell in their own way. And to understand that I'm not hiring a mini-me because there's no such thing. I think that's the other danger that a lot of times CEOs and founders fall into is they want someone who sells like they do. And that is not going to happen because no one is ever going to be as vested in the product and the company as you are, ever. So you've got to,
ironically,
you've got to understand that part too.
Yeah, that makes sense. I've often wondered, I've come to the conclusion I might be my own worst employee if I hired another one of me. So, So we've got a CEO. They sit back and they say, "Listen, I do want to make a change. I'm going to implement a gratitude practice, or I'm going to start to try to bring emotion into, you know, the forefront, and I want to be conscious and proactive about creating emotion." Is that what you would do? You would say, "Hey, like, start your day with how, you know, with your emotions rather than your actions," or how does a CEO take this and begin to implement it?
Yeah, emotions are always going to drive your behavior either in a positive way or a negative way. So the first thing is, you know, when you have, think of having a splinter in your finger. When you have a splinter, you can do a couple of things. One is you could just take some aspirin or take some painkillers and then you don't feel the splinter. That's managing it. Or what most people would do is you just pull the splinter out. And now your finger feels fine. It heals. It feels fine. And so the first thing for people to do is really, you've got to remove the root cause. Because when you get the virus out, when you get the performance drag removed, then having the gratitude practice and focusing on your emotions are going to feel better. And therefore, all of your actions are going to be better. Your clarity comes back. Your decision speed comes back. I mean, we've had some amazing stories of people that have, you know, built some businesses that have gone a little stagnant. And then all of a sudden they come back online and they're like, oh, I found the person that I needed to find. It was so easy. I looked for 2 years to find somebody. And all of a sudden they show up in, you know, practically in my backyard. So you've got to remove the interference first and then also focus on the emotion. And so what we tell a lot of our clients is, when you are going to take an action, so let's pretend you still are, you know, you are the founder and you are still selling. If you're going to go prospect by phone, which nobody ever likes to do, and many people can argue it doesn't work anymore, but if you're going to go just make a cold call, everybody understands how that works. You've got to think about, what is the emotion I need to feel in order to make this call as successful as possible? And if you think about what is the emotion, it would be something like confidence or abundance or something around that. Not that feeling of like, oh my gosh, let me just get this over with. Oh my gosh, I just have to be disciplined and get it done. Oh no, I hope the person doesn't answer the phone because I really don't want to have a conversation. The fear that most people have, check it off. If you can get into that emotion and then go do your cold call, I guarantee you it will go better. It doesn't always mean that you're going to get a deal or a meeting, but it will go better when you get the right emotion first. And the same thing happens with hiring. So many people are afraid of hiring because they've had mishires. They can't find people. They're afraid that the person, they're going to train them and then they're going to leave, et cetera, et cetera. So if you're hiring under an emotion of fear or lack or scarcity, then yes, it's going to be very difficult. What's the emotion you need to have to get the best hire? Do that, then go try to find people, then go do the interview, then go figure out how you need to onboard somebody to become a great salesperson in your company.
This is fascinating. It seems to me, as I think through some people that I work with, clients, other people, there's a retraining that probably has to happen here to go from, you know, persistent, driven, grinding, logical, intellectual, whatever you call yourself to, I got to add an emotional layer to this. At least be mindful of the emotion I'm entering into this transaction with. Like that's not going to come. I mean, it's not going to come naturally at this point to people who have created entire systems that don't include that. Right. So that's a whole retraining, for many people, I would guess. Is that what you see when you're working with people?
Yeah, it's a different focus because the reality is the emotion is there. You're just not paying attention to it. So you think you're just going in and taking action and doing the things and executing and pushing and being disciplined. But I guarantee you, before you do any of that, you're feeling something first. So whether it's feeling like, I just got to get it done, feeling like, hey, I'm strong, now I can go do this. Whatever it is, there is a feeling that precedes it. That's just what neuroscience teaches us. There's always a feeling. So think, what I'm suggesting is that you think about the feeling, you focus on the feeling you want, because you can change the way you feel anytime you want to. You're the only one that can change it. So you could sit down at your desk and feel dread and feel like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. Or you can sit down at your desk and go, all right, I'm going to have fun putting together this document. I'm going to have fun putting together a hiring process. You know, you decide which way it's going to go. One way is going to be a lot easier. One way is going to be a lot harder. But it's having that forethought before you take the action and understanding that your emotion is going to dictate your result, good or bad. And you're the one in charge of your emotion.
Well, I'm really glad for the added explanation, because I probably made a fundamental error in assuming that we do a lot of things without emotion. I'm glad you clarified that everything we do is with emotion. We're just perhaps overlooking it, not recognizing it, not acknowledging it.
Right.
So, well, I want to ask one last question here if I can, and that before, you know, then you can, you're welcome to share your information if you want people to get a hold of you. But we're talking about this from a CEO kind of, I think, really individual level. Is there an aspect of this that also applies to team culture? I mean, are you able to take this same neuroscience concept and, I don't know if implement it is the right word, but at least understand that it's part of your team culture too. Does that apply here?
Oh, absolutely. Much more than most CEOs really realize, because the nervous system state of the CEO, the highest ranking person in the company or in the room, leaks into the rest of the team, even though you may not know it. Because we are emotional beings, we feel the way other people feel. We know when someone's upset, when they're under stress, when they're happy, and we have a tendency to mirror those same feelings back. So when the CEO is under a lot of pressure, a lot of performance drag, stress, whatever it may be, that CEO's emotions are leaking into all of the team, and they don't have to be in the room with you in order for that to happen. And you can see that in companies where you see morale decreasing, where you see people becoming more quiet in meetings, people that are not taking risk, when you see your team executing more slowly, when you see people kind of, you know, taking a lot more pause before a price is raised or when a negotiation is done or when a product is launched. And so you can see that. And so, you know, and as the nervous system of the CEO is impacting the team, that also impacts the speed of the team. And we all know that the speed of the decisions will start to stagnate growth over time. And so it's really, really important for the CEO to be very aware of whether they've got that drag and whether they're, when they are leaking it into their employees. And you can't fake it. People know. You can go in with a smile, but if you're not feeling it, everyone knows.
they see the leakage. I'm gonna have to bring that phrase into one of my team discussions here. Sorry to be leaking all over you. Or, no, this is fascinating, Rochelle. I mean, what I'm taking away from this, in addition to the words you're saying, is there are so many layers to this. From, you know, personal performance as a CEO to team performance, from you know, making maybe the right decisions or better decisions to making faster decisions that benefit the team. I love the layering here, and we might need to explore this again at some point in the future. But in the meantime, where could people find you if they want to hear more about performance drag, or if they feel like maybe I've got some performance drag that I need to address? How would they get in touch with you?
Well, the easiest thing, we created a free performance drag scorecard. It takes about a minute, and it will give you an instant result and tell you how much performance drag you have and what you can do about it. And so people can find that by either going to my website, emotionalbp.com. You'll just find a little button on there and click that. Or you can go to bit.ly. So it's bit.ly/founder scorecard. And that's free. You can instantly find out what your level of performance drag is. And then, of course, you can also find me on LinkedIn. And lots of different articles and YouTube videos that you can find on there and learn more about performance drag there as well.
I love it. Well, this has been really insightful, Rochelle. And just want to say thank you for joining me today and sharing these insights with me. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
And thanks to our audience for joining us again on another episode of the Breakout CEO Podcast.
Be sure to follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you enjoy the show, a rating or a review goes a long way. Our mission is to promote the stories of breakout CEOs in scaling SaaS, e-commerce, and tech companies, to equip peer CEOs with valuable perspectives and confidence. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of The Breakout CEO. I'm Jeff Holman, and I'll see you next time.